interest of Estralita. And once again, this case is In Re Interest of Estralita. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Melina Dobson, Deputy County Attorney, and I represent the state of Nebraska, and I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please. I'm seeking a reversal of the juvenile court's dismissal of my guardianship motion in this case. In other words, I'm seeking that this court instate a guardianship between Estralita and the foster mother that has lovingly cared for Estralita from age 3 until today. Estralita is almost 9 years old. I'm asking for reversal for two reasons. First of all, the court erred in inappropriately attributing the parent's inability to care for Estralita to barriers. And second, the court inappropriately relied on non-medical providers in a medical neglect case. Estralita allegedly fell into a pot of soup at age 2 while in her parents' care and was treated here in Lincoln at Madonna Rehabilitation Hospital. While inpatient, the medical providers, had serious concerns about her parents' inability or non-compliance with Estralita's cares. The state called Estralita's team of surgeon, pediatrician, occupational therapist, and nurses to testify that those concerns from age 2 were still present 50 months later. Despite that, the court relied on the non-medical professionals who only joined the case shortly before the filing of the guardianship motion. The medical professionals' testimony, although it was sensitive and difficult to do in the presence of the parents, it demonstrated a lack of cognitive ability on the parents' part with regards to Estralita's sophisticated medical cares. Dr. Riley's comments illustrate that when she says that it seems like we always have to start over with retraining the parents, retraining the parents on the basic nuances of Estralita's care. Now juxtapose that concern with Estralita's occupational therapist. Estralita's occupational therapist works with her virtually day in and day out. That's the person who works on the fine motor skills after the surgery occurs. She states that Estralita's caregiver has to have a sophisticated ability to vigilantly monitor the old surgical sites for scarring and thickness so that Estralita doesn't lose important abilities like the ability to use her hands, the ability to stretch her arms over her head. So the concern with Dr. Riley, the surgeon, that the parents have to be retaught even the most basic nuances and that they're not picking them up is a grave concern when Estralita's caregiver has to monitor all those old surgical sites. And just to refresh your recollection, Estralita has surgery every 6 months.
Excuse me, counsel. This isn't a situation where Estralita has been returned to her parents' care or there's even a recommendation to be returned to their care.
That's correct.
And so who is providing the kind of care that you're talking about?
Yes, Your Honor. The care is happening in a combination of two ways. The foster mother is the pediatrician that cared for Estralita while she was inpatient. She became a foster parent to care for Estralita after the father's violence caused the first foster parent to withdraw. Dr. Holst stepped up and became the parent. She takes the child to all of the therapies, etc., and the care happens at those therapies.
I guess what I'm really seeking to ask you is what would be the benefit to this child of having a guardianship compared to what is currently being provided?
Yes, Your Honor. There's testimony from Estralita's long-term mental health therapist, Dr. Paula Ray, a neuropsychologist here at Madonna, that Estralita is identifying as a foster kid. So on top of all these other problems, she needs permanency. She's languishing for years. I mean, since she hasn't been home since before she was 2. She turns 9 in August. She's identified as a foster kid all these years. She needs permanency. And that's the reason that the state is seeking a guardianship. And Dr. Ray opined that that would be in Estrelita's best interest. It's also important to note with regards to Dr. Ray, I'd like this court to think of this case in sort of 2 chunks, from the time Estrelita was born all the way up to the time of the filing of the guardianship, over 3 years later. During that time, there's all these providers, and the state called 9 medical professionals, mental health therapists, and then after that, at the time of the filing, there's the 3 witnesses that the court relied upon. And you might be asking yourself, why would the court not rely upon the long-time mental health therapist that was part of Estrelita's original team? And I proffer to this court that this trial spanned over a year. The state presented its evidence, and there was a 6-month lapse before the parents presented their evidence. And that's when those subsequent, more recent therapists gave their testimony. The problem is, Dr. Potter and Teresa Lenzen admitted they did not know the occupational therapist's concerns. Dr. Potter admitted she did not know in detail what the parents were facing in terms of Estrelita's return. And Teresa Lenzen testified to that same lack of knowledge in terms of the medical care. So the court accepted recommendations about best interests from providers that admittedly don't know what Estrelita is facing. Secondly, the court inappropriately attributed the lack of parental ability to barriers. Again, this was a year-long trial, and I'm not sure if the court forgot the testimony. I'm not trying to be disrespectful in any way, but it covered a long time. And at the beginning of this trial, over a year before the court wrote the order, Dr. Riley testified. She met with the caseworker, and they talked about moving therapy to Omaha, but they decided that it wasn't in Estrelita's best interest. So the court says it's not clear what efforts have been made to alleviate the geographical barrier, but in terms of moving therapy, but the doctor and the caseworker determined it wasn't in Estrelita's best interest. The team here in Lincoln is more specialized. Estrelita's been bonded to them since she was a toddler. And the team in Omaha, which that's where Dr. Riley is, her own team, she felt was less able to provide Estrelita specialized care. So that's one barrier that the court incorrectly attributed the parents' inability. A second barrier was unclear means for assessing the parents' abilities. There is a lot of argument in the parents' brief that training didn't occur in the home. And this is a huge red herring, and I present it to you in an analogy. If the parents had said surgery hadn't occurred in the home, you'd know that wasn't appropriate. But that's the case here. Occupational therapy, that's where training occurs, and that occurs at the clinic, not in the home. And the parents were not going to the training. Erin Ryer, the occupational therapist, for a year prior to the guardianship trial, testified the majority of the time the parents don't come to therapy. So the court is concerned about an overnight visit not happening one night a month, where Estrelita would be sleeping in the parents' home, and where tube feeding would not be trained because the order for tube feeding had been canceled. But in the meantime, at this very same time, the court is missing the fact that the parents aren't going to therapy.
What was the explanation for the parents not participating in the therapy?
Your Honor, if the court looks at Exhibit 105, it's a transcript from proceedings where I specifically asked the mother why she's not attending therapy in the fall of 2013, the critical period right before the filing, and she's not able to articulate it. But one thing she does say is it's not NFC's fault. She says, I ask her, has NFC told you can't go? And she says no. if this court, there's multiple times that you have the opportunity to read the mother and the father's testimony, and it's the best indicator that the parents can't articulate Estrelita's needs. They can't advocate for her. They can't answer questions about her sophisticated care. It's really telling, and that's...
Well, you would agree that for any parent, this would be a difficult situation to deal with.
It's difficult. It's hard for me to talk about in the presence of the parents. It was hard for the medical providers to testify in front of the parents because they still have to, not have to, but get to work with this family. But ultimately, as this court has said, we have to put Estrelita's needs ahead of the needs of the parents.
And I know now I'm going to take you over time, but briefly, backing up, there were issues in this case raised as to whether this is a final appealable order, and I don't want to ask you about that because you did brief that, but the department has also raised the issue that the state itself lacks standing to appeal, and you didn't address that in your brief, so I'll give you 20 seconds to give me an answer.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would direct this court to In re Tanisha P., in which the court determined that the state has a distinct interest from the department. In that case, I believe the department and the state disagreed as to placement, and the court found that, in fact, the state had a distinct interest to bring that matter.
You don't happen to have that cite before you?
I apologize. I thought I had it in front of me, but I do know it's in
relation. I believe I'm familiar with the case. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time did we take her over? 1 minute. You may add that to the appellee's time. Okay. And are we splitting time?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And I'm just asking for 3 minutes of time for Mr. Barber.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is John Baker. I'm legal counsel for the Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services. And this afternoon, just in my 3 minutes, I want to address just the narrow issue of this being a final appealable order. The department's position is that this is not a final appealable order for two reasons. The first reason is this. And we're using the case of Carly D. as our basis for the argument. In Carly D. was a situation where a grandmother had petitioned the juvenile court for a juvenile court guardianship. The county attorney and the Department of Health and Human Services did not agree with that. In the discussion as far as whether the state had a legal interest or its legal right was being affected by this proceeding, Carly D. discussed that the state has the legal interest in its role as parents' patriot. And the state's role as parents' patriot came into being when the juvenile court placed the child with the Department of Health and Human Services, which in effect was placing the child in the custody of the state. In this particular case, very similar things have happened in that the state's parents' patriae was fulfilled when the juvenile court placed Estrelita in the temporary custody of the Department of Health and Human Services, in effect placing her with the state, in effect fulfilling the parents' patriae. The interest being affected then is, I guess, well, my argument is that since the child's in the custody of the state, custody of the Department of Health and Human Services, the parents' patriae is being fulfilled that way, the department does not disagree with the judge's ruling in this. And if there's not a disagreement and we're fulfilling the parents' patriae, the question is then how can this be a final appealable order? Are we appealing ourselves on that? The second argument the department has as to whether there is standing is based on 43-285. 43-285 discusses that the department can be ordered to provide a permanency plan to the court. But it's interesting, as you read that statute, there is no other entity that is authorized to go ahead and provide that permanency plan. It is the department. Prior to that statute being amended in 2011, I believe it was, there was language in there that indicated the department's plan was presumptively the right plan. And the parties, county attorney, guardian, and light of parents attorney, could go ahead and present evidence to throw out our plan, if you will, to contest the plan. However, with the change in statute, that language is completely gone now. As I recall, years ago, there used to be language in the statute that other parties could present a permanency plan to the court. That's no longer in the statute. So the department's position is that we're the ones that present the permanency plan to the court. The court has ultimately the responsibility to adopt it or reject it. And because of that, the department would argue that county attorney did not have standing to bring this action. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Joshua Barber. I represent the father, Jose Lorenzo, who is present in the courtroom today with his wife and four of his other children. I want to begin by giving the court the citation of the case that was cited by Ms. Dobson, and that is 9 Nebraska 9 Nebap 344. And we would submit that that case is distinguishable from the facts in this case, just as the facts in this case are distinguishable from the facts in Carly D, because in that case, the court adopted a plan recommending that the children be transitioned home.
Which case are you speaking of now?
Tanisha.
Okay. Thank you.
We would agree that when the court makes a determination that changes the placement of the children, that does affect the parens patriae right of the state. However, in this case, the court did not do that. The only thing the court did was deny the guardianship motion and leave the existing plan in place.
But it affected the legal status, though, didn't it?
Of the child,
yes.
Your Honor? In no way. Did it affect... The child remained a ward of the state and under the guardianship of the Department of Health and Human Services. There was no order changing her placement, the parents' rights to visitation, or, in essence, her legal status. She was not made a guardian of another individual after having been the guardian of the agents first. Now, we would submit that leaving the status quo as is does not give the state standing to appeal the order.
Had the guardianship been granted, would that have allowed the state then to not provide services in the future?
That was one of the things that the county attorney had asked for in its motion, was that the foster parent be appointed as the guardian of the child, that Health and Human Services be relieved of its duty to provide services, that the court retain its jurisdiction. But as the court noted in its order as well, there was no plan provided for continuing the any visitation with the child and the parents or the child and the siblings, which the providers testified were both in the child's best interest. And there was no plan aimed at continuing to educate and train the parents to continue to provide the various medical cares of the child. So it essentially would have relieved the department of its duties and provided no further plan for including the parents in this child's life. So we would join the argument of the Department of Health and Human Services that the county attorney lacks standing to appeal from this order. And we would also join the argument that it was not a final appealable order because it didn't affect a substantial right of the state for reasons that Mr. Baker articulated and for reasons that I noted in the motion that we made initially in this case for summary dismissal for lack of jurisdiction. With regard to the arguments of the county attorney, I want to go first to Ms. Dobson's arguments regarding the court's failure to give, in essence, due regard to the expert opinion testimony of Drs. Riley, Dr. Springman, and Aaron Ryer. Those were the three primary providers of medical services on the date of trial, following commencement of the trial, and during the time period immediately before the trial. As Ms. Dobson explained, this case has gone through several phases. When this child was initially injured, she was treated inpatient at Madonna Rehab Facility for at least 6 months before she was discharged. That was in 2009 and early 2010. There were a number of providers that provided for her care during that time period. And this is all pre-adjudication and pre-removal because she was inpatient at that time. Following discharge from inpatient care, which occurred in February of 2010, Estrelita began treatment in something known as the Rehabilitation Day Program, which was sort of an outpatient program where she would go and stay at the facility for the better part of the day and participate in various forms of care. During that phase, she was receiving care from a different group of providers, a different group of nurses, and a different group of therapists. There was some overlap when certain ones couldn't fill in, but for the most part, there was a change. And then the final stage of care, which is what we're in now, and what the child was in during the entire period of the trial and the year before that, she was simply going to occupational therapy and physical therapy at Madonna for outpatient appointments multiple times per week. During the entire time period, she was under the care of Dr. Riley, who was the surgeon, Dr. Springman, who was the pediatrician, and also a colleague of the foster parent. And the primary occupational therapist was Aaron Ryer. Riley, Springman, and Ryer all testified at trial. The court described their testimony in its order, and the court clearly explained what their respective positions were. So the order acknowledges, in the order, the court clearly considered their testimony. Although the county attorney has pointed out their comments, those experts' comments about the parents' various deficiencies, there are several things that are important to note about each one of those experts. With regard to the expert opinions, much of the information they relied on in forming their opinions was old. The bulk of the information was nursing notes from inpatient care and notes from the rehab day program. The second is that this was the first time for them to give this kind of an opinion. The third is that none of them had noted their negative opinions about the parents' capabilities in any of their medical records, save for, no, those three I don't believe that they had, except for maybe Aaron Ryer on a few occasions. The fourth, none of them could point to any action or inaction on the part of the parents when they were asked on cross-examination that harmed Estrelita.
Can you respond to Ms. Dobson's assertion that the parents failed to participate in the occupational therapy?
I can. The parents participated in the occupational therapy routinely from the time that she was discharged until through the time of trial, with the exception of one time period during the fall of 2012. There was a surgery in August of 2012 and a series of occupational therapy that followed. The parents did not participate in that therapy for this reason. All of the therapy before that, Health and Human Services, through its caseworker, had arranged for supervision during the therapy. The parents understood that supervision was required in order for them to participate in the therapy. There was no clear direction given to the parents following the August surgery as to the plan for supervision of that therapy. So, and I think that's clear in the record.
Thank you very
much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do Do we have any time for Ms. Dobson? We took Mr. Barber over a little bit. I'll let you have 30 seconds. How's that?
Oh, I already utilized my rebuttal time.
You did, but we'll give you 30 seconds here. Very quickly, please.
Just with respect to not attending the therapy, I'd rely on the experts on that. Erin Ryer, the occupational therapy, she began in January of 2013, and it's her testimony the parents didn't attend for the majority of the time. Mr. Barber's assertion that the parents' understanding regarding not having a visitation worker, it's not supported by the record, as I indicated to the court earlier. They multiple times say everything that they've asked from NFC, they got. And as the court knows, the parents have a duty. If there's something lacking, such as inability to go to therapy 3 times a week for an entire recovery period, may I complete my sentence, Your Honor?
Please.
That they should bring that to the court's attention, and it was not.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone. The case is submitted. And I noticed that there's some signatures at least missing from our sign-in sheet, so if you didn't sign in at the clerk of the Supreme Court's office, would you please do so on your way out?
Yes, I will.
Thank you. Our next case is In Re Interest of Jacob.